And now it's time for the Wild Side News with your host, Sydney Wildsmith.
Spring. You can sense it in the air. Our wild places are awakening. Birds are proclaiming the rebirth of another year with quickening bird song. It's a time to celebrate, and we will, our common sense of wonder when we return, as we do each Thursday morning, here on the Wild Side News.
Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
What a beautiful day here in San Diego. It's spring. I want to welcome all my regular listeners and invite you and our many new listeners to join in today's show by phoning 888-327-0061. We've got a lot in store, so let's start talking about today's topic. Common sense is a term that I really enjoy thinking about because it feels central to all that I wish to convey here on the Wild Side News. Common sense, who can argue with that? It's just common sense. The ancients talked about common sense, and they believed that it was a place where all the senses met. It was kind of like the parliament of perception. Historically, people have forged this need into form with the commons, a place we all come together. We're all aware of our senses. We learn about them early in life, seeing, smelling, touching, tasting, and hearing. But as humans, we cannot all see the same thing, nor can we all taste the same thing. But it seems we can sense the same things. I like to think about how we exhibit common sense. When an infant girl falls into a deep well, a community comes together, forgetting all differences to save her. It's just a common sense thing to do. We feel it. It is reasonable. We sense it. It has real power. Or now, with our war in Iraq, we may have our arguments about its justification or implementation, but we all sense the injustice of torturing prisoners. Common sense, it's a powerful force, which seems to balance reason with the heart. And we move forward and do the right things. Lots of us do. Common sense seems to broadcast outward. It reaches out into our families and neighborhoods and communities. It is a shared sense. Certainly animals have common sense. Taken literally, animals exhibit extraordinary common sense. The birds which flock in masses have a common sense which unites them to progress to the common good. Schools of fish swim with exquisite, instantaneous precision, as if they were all connected or tied by a common sense. A dog which rushes into a burning home to save a small child exhibits extraordinary common sense with its family. Obviously, nature has gifted the living beings with common sense. It's perhaps what mysteriously keeps certain species alive, their common sense. So this common sense of the living is perhaps a mysterious but very real living communication network. Today, we'll be expanding our common sense to include the life which also lives within this wider common sense network. What's the common sense of our public lands? It is literally common ground. What happens when we deepen our senses to the other living beings which try in their ways to reach us through our common senses? We'll be taking a common sense look at the issue of preserving the natural places in the backcountry of Utah. We'll take a look at the common sense which inspired the wisdom to preserve for all posterity our most wondrous places with our national parks. Yellowstone is about to celebrate the 100th birthday of the legendary Old Faithful Inn. And we'll explore a more intimate form of common sense as we learn how to listen and pay attention to the sounds and calls of the birds that gift us with free music every day, everywhere, with someone who has spent his life listening. He'll be helping us learn how to identify the common bird songs in our backyard, fields, forests, and shores. And in our final segment, we'll visit the home of a recent president who became renowned for his common sense. So relax, take a deep breath. It's time to head off into the wild, true wonder. And so, the news. It's no secret that the pace of change and challenge in America and around the world contribute to an inability to exercise our common sense. So we're going to quickly move our thoughts out to our open spaces and to give us a sense of the magnitude for many generations to come of an upcoming decision about a single road, I turn now to Kristen Brengel, who is speaking on behalf of the Wilderness Society, and she's talking to us from Washington, D.C. Kristen, how can one single backcountry road have such significance?
Well, thanks for inviting me on the show, first of all. The significance of this road is not the road itself, but it's the impact that it has to our greater public lands and how we view Western lands. This controversy has been raging for decades, and it's affectionately called RS-2477. It's an old mining law that allowed people to create roads out west, and of late, in the last about 20 years, it's been used to by counties and states across the West and others to say that they lay claim to routes that, when you actually look out on the landscape, they're goat paths and old wagon ruts and sometimes off-road vehicle tracks, and they're claiming these as their own, as public highways. And in Utah specifically, the state has claimed about 10,000 of these roads, I say, in quotes, that would completely change and carve up Red Rock Wilderness and would change the landscape forever and change what the Americans expect when they go out to these areas. We're talking about areas that lie near Zion and Canyonlands National Parks and Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument that could be carved up paved roads at a certain point in history if they wanted to further develop them. But this has really been, from the Wilderness Society's perspective and other wilderness groups, a real campaign to try to prevent more wilderness from being designated and really a way to disrupt protecting these lands for future generations.
So I guess if this legislation should pass, and by the way, we have until Saturday, and I'd like you to talk briefly about that to offer our public commentary, this could set the precedent to open up massive areas to road development on our public lands and across parks and actually potentially through wilderness areas based on old 1866 mining laws. Is that right?
Yeah. This application, if you go to the BLM's website, or rather, I would urge people to go to the Wilderness Society's website at www.wilderness.org and our Take Action page. And this is called the Weiss Highway. It goes through a county called Juab County, Utah. And the this is an application to obtain the right-of-way for 99 miles of a road. Now, the worst part about how precedent-setting this application is if you actually take a look at it yourself. The state of Utah is claiming that they own a right-of-way by simply providing some aerial photography from 1976 that doesn't even have a date on it, some updated current pictures of the road, and seven affidavits from gentlemen who said that they at one time worked on the Juab County road crew, and they don't even identify specifically any maintenance or construction work they did. They just say it's by reputation in the community that the road existed. So just based on that scant evidence, it is possible that the Interior Department will just turn over a 99-mile road on federal public land with barely any evidence. And this is part of the bigger picture of this public lands giveaway that we believe is happening right now, that if they give away this 99-mile road in the West Desert of Utah, this opens up the door for them to give away, you know, razor cow paths all over public lands out west. In places that we adore, like Mojave National Preserve in California, or Denali National Park and Preserve in Alaska, or Browns Park National Wildlife Refuge in Colorado, it opens up all those areas to the potential to give away these road rights of ways, whether they exist or not, with scant evidence that they can barely substantiate.
I'm going to have to move to our next guest who's waiting, but I want how can people contact you how can they give their input on this issue before Saturday?
Like I said, I would definitely go to our website at www.wilderness.org and go to our Take Action page, and it's our most current action, I believe, and it's called, I think, Bogus Road Claim or Phony Road Claim, and take a look at the evidence, and we have a link to the BLM's website so people can take a look at that application, and please comment by Saturday. We want to make a big difference and send the Interior Department a very clear message that they should deny this application.
Okay, thanks, Kristen. I wish we had more time, but we'll talk again soon because it's always great to talk with you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you, Kristen.
Bye-bye.
And now we move to actually Wyoming and Montana to Yellowstone National Park, the world's first national park. There was truly a common sense amongst the U.S. legislators back in 1872 who knew that preserving our natural wonders made perfect sense for this nation. And as a result, we're about to celebrate a true landmark. There's millions of Americans and people from all over the world who have stood inside the grand Old Faithful Inn and were amazed at what common sense and common will can accomplish. To tell us about this, I'm so pleased to welcome Cheryl Matthews, who has the great pleasure of speaking about the wonders of Yellowstone National Park. Cheryl, tell us about this historic landmark and its birthday.
The Yellowstone turns 100, and tomorrow we're going to have a celebration to see it into our next century. Beginning at 11 a.m., we will be holding a ceremony. I think it's remarkable
If you'd like to make a call, please hang up and try again. If you need help.
Hold on, please. I'm sorry.
No problem.
I will figure this board out one of these days. Go ahead, please, Cheryl. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, again, you know, thousands upon thousands of anonymous visitors throughout the years have taken Old Faithful into their hearts and made it their own. And so this is a celebration for all those visitors that beginning tomorrow, we're going to start the second 100 years of the Old Faithful Inn.
Well, I spent a couple of summers in Yellowstone as the artist in residence there, and the inn is an amazing place. As a matter of fact, I have dreams about it. It has a mythos and a romance that is probably second to none. Why don't you tell us a little bit about its history, going back 100 years, and how it served our national parks in that time?
Well, I think what's amazing is that the Old Faithful Inn, and you're familiar with the Old Faithful, and, you know, it can get up to 10 feet of snow during the winter season, minus 20 degrees, and even at times minus 50. And during the winter of 1903-1904, we had around 45 workers that started building the Old Faithful Inn in time for it to open during 1904, you know, at a construction cost of around $140,000, if you can believe that. So this year, the 2004 year, we do open the doors to celebrate what they were able to do, which is quite remarkable.
Well, it also is one of the largest log structures in the world, I believe, isn't it?
It is one of the largest. The lobby itself is six stories high.
Wow.
You know, you step into that lobby, and it's like stepping into a forest. You're surrounded by the ambience of a forest, the rustic architecture. Architect Robert Reamer, you know, had a whole different vision with him when he came to Yellowstone to build the Old Faithful Inn, and it was his belief that you could create a structure that would appear to have grown out of its surroundings, you know, a structure inside and out that would seem to be a very extension of the wilderness, and he accomplished that goal.
It's an absolute legacy landmark for Americans, certainly a tribute to the great common sense of our forefathers and citizens who agreed that to set aside our natural wonders was a very great part of being an American citizen. Any idea how many people have actually visited the inn over its 100-year history?
No, but, you know, it's absolutely millions have.
Yes. Well, it's an amazing place, and one of the things that I'm intrigued with in particular is the awesome beauty of the design. It's crafted in such a way that many artisans were involved in putting this place together. It's extraordinary. So I encourage anybody and everybody who, if you haven't been there, go to Yellowstone, go to the inn, and then tell us about how you're going to celebrate the 100th birthday party.
Well, again, the grand opening is tomorrow at 11 a.m., and then throughout the summer there will be what's called Heritage Zantara Heritage Days, where they'll have special programs, exhibits, and activities. On June 1st, there's going to be a U.S. Postal Pictorial Cancellation Stamp in the lobby of the inn. And then, of course, interpretive programs throughout the summer at both our visitor center and at the inn itself.
Now, are you at the inn now as you're calling?
I am not, but I will be shortly.
Okay, because, of course, the purpose of the inn is the fact that there is this miraculous thing called Old Faithful, and it's truly an American landmark again. Tell us a little bit about Old Faithful and why it is that so many people like to come and see that amazing reality.
Well, Old Faithful geyser is one of our more dependable geysers. You know, on an average, it erupts about every 94 minutes, about 130 feet. And I think it's just one of those, you know, Yellowstone was established in 1872, and to have the ability to still come here and enjoy its natural features, I think, is quite amazing.
Well, Cheryl, thank you so much. And I, by the way, if people wish to visit the National Parks website, can you give us some information about that?
Yes, that's a great site with lots of good information. The website address is www.nps.gov/YELL.
Perfect. Thank you, Cheryl, for joining us on the Wild Side News.
Well, it's been great, and we do encourage everyone to come and enjoy this wonderful opportunity to celebrate the Old Faithful Inn.
Thanks for being here.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. No sense going anywhere else, but here on the Wild Side News, broadcast live each Thursday.